The Unruffled Beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch signals Thursday, 10 p.m. And time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling right here on listener sponsor 90.1 KPFT Houston. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, professor of communication at the University of Houston downtown, along with Jacob Reiner, working the boards. You know, as author Harold Goddard sees it, the destiny of the world is determined less by the battles won than the stories it loves and believes in. Battles for righteousness, the kind that opposes oppression and contests those committed to eclipsing hatred from the shores of humanity, are engaged in the goodness of what conflict can hold. And the heroes most likely to emerge from confrontations spurred by those who hate are the protagonists in the narratives they leave behind. Matthew Shepard is one of those heroes. Matt was a student at the University of Wyoming when he was beaten, tortured, and left to die near Laramie, Wyoming, on the night of October 6, 1998, and died 6 days later at Pudreau Valley Hospital in Fort Collins, Colorado. My guest this evening taught at the University of Wyoming when Matthew Shepard was a student, and though he never personally knew him, his story is about the extraordinary impact Matthew's murder had on him. My colleague, Dr. Paul Mandel, is an assistant professor of Spanish at the University of Houston downtown. Last year, Paul co-authored The Development of Spanish as a Second Language, a Guide for Teachers. Dr. Mandel currently serves on the board of Out for Education, a Houston nonprofit that writes between 85 and 100,000 in scholarships annually to college students from the greater Houston area. He also volunteers with the students, including the UHD United Nations Ambassadors at the Beacon, a day center in the heart of downtown Houston that provides laundry services, showers, hot meals, and case management between 500 and 600 people each day, members of the downtown critically homeless street community, and represents the university on the Homeless Youth Network, a consortium of organizations who share the goal of assisting homeless youth in and around Houston. Paul, welcome. I'm glad you're here. It's been a while, and we've been trying to get you here for a while, and I'm very glad that you're here.
Thank you. This is great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. How severe is the crisis among homeless youth? We know about the homeless crisis, but among youth, that was staggering to me.
One of the things that we're looking at, and the Homeless Youth Network, and specifically the NEST initiative, is working with not only in Houston but nationally, is the question of young people who come out as gay, lesbian, or bisexual, or transgender, and who are subsequently find themselves homeless or thrown out of the home. And so there are a number of organizations that are trying to do things like provide drop-in centers for youth that are living on the streets, to providing the FCI, for example, now is actually putting together a series of online lessons for families who find themselves with gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender youth and not quite sure how to respond to that.
Yeah. How did you get involved in that?
Good fortune. I was, again, because of the work that you just described, I was actually asked by the president's office to work with us and to represent the university in this capacity.
Yeah, I want to tell our listeners that I've known you for a few years, and it's amazing how we really don't get to know our colleagues until we can have them on shows like this. And I think that's one of the great benefits of having colleagues on a show like this. We really get to know them for what they are, and what they are pretty magnificent. What's the UHD United Nations Ambassador?
This is a group of students that are partially representing different countries around the world, as the United Nations ambassadors would suggest, but they also do debate work, and they also, under the leadership of their current president, Isha Khan, they're specifically looking to incorporate a significant service component in their work, such that they are participating in numerous outreach community projects and then writing about them, such that they can take it to the international community and possibly be modeled internationally about a lot of the work that they're doing here in Houston.
Wonderful. You know, it's clear by your interest that you are a community-centered, very caring individual. And as a colleague, I can attest to your social conscience and commitment to protecting human dignity. I saw it in the way that you treat your students. I saw it in that class that I observed last year. And also just in the corridors of life at UHD, you were on the faculty I want to make sure that we understand this. You were on the faculty at Wyoming from 1996 to 1998, attending student meetings regularly, and you were on leave at the University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana the semester Matt was attacked.
Yes.
And I know that your decision not to return to Wyoming was largely due to Matt's murder, and that's part of your story. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to dig down deeper than I want to yet. But before you tell us the story, Paul, tell us what inspired you to want to share this story to our listeners tonight.
Well, you had asked me if I had a story to tell, and one of the things I was thinking about, because as you mentioned, this happened in 1998, mm-hmm. and it happened about this time of the year.
Yeah.
And so I was actually, as you know, I'm recently coming up for consideration for promotion. And as I was reflecting on the work that I've done at UHD in the last 5 years, something that I find rather cathartic is bringing together and thinking about the history that's brought me to where I am now professionally and socially, and why I'm here in Houston.
Yeah.
And so when you asked me to think about that, this was one of the stories that came to mind.
We're excited about it. And, of course, being on the show is one of the requirements for getting promotion. You probably know that.
I heard.
Tell us your story.
Well, it's like this. For starters, as you mentioned, I was on my first job out of graduate school is at the University of Wyoming, and I'm originally from Atlanta. I had gone from Atlanta to Champaign, Illinois, a city of 3 million to a city of a town of 126,000, and initially I thought. When I first got there, I thought, what am I doing here? It's so small. I'm surrounded by corn. This just isn't going to work. And within a very short period of time, I found myself in what I like to refer to as an academic country club. It was magnificent in terms of what we were able to do at the university, such that 6 years later, when I was offered a job at the University of Wyoming and I was going to go to then a town of 24,000, I thought, well, I can do that. I mean, I've made it a jump in the past. And so I did. And I found myself in a very interesting circumstance that I'm in a town that is at the same altitude as Santa Fe, New Mexico, at 7,000 feet above sea level. But for all intents and purposes, during the winter, it's almost a desert prairie. And the wind doesn't stop, and the cold is unimaginable, and it's a remarkable place. But you have to have a passion for that type of landscape and that type of living. Both years that I was there, I can recall three days of the year, both years, in which they closed the state because the wind was so great and the snow was so deep and the cold was so great that you couldn't fly in and you couldn't drive in and you couldn't walk in or regardless. And so after my second year there, I was offered an opportunity to work as a visiting professor at Champaign, and I went back to where I'd gone to graduate school for that purpose. And this particular evening, the Friday that Matt Shepard was found, I was actually at a party that evening at about 9:30, quarter of 10 at night, and a former student of mine came up to me, and he at the time was serving as the producer for the local NBC news channel. And he said, "You're a professor at the University of Wyoming, aren't you?" And I said, "Yeah, John, I am." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "You're on leave and you're here, right?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Did you hear what happened this evening?" And I said, "No." And then he proceeded to describe what had been found and the way Matthew had been found. And you'll forgive me that I get a little emotional about it now, because it's still, I had been where he was found, and it is in the middle of nowhere, and it is so incredibly cold. And it's so incredibly desolate, and the I don't want to go into a lot of details about what had happened in the attack itself, but all I could imagine was that this young man was there pleading for his life, and these two people were essentially beating him and in this place and leaving him for dead, and I couldn't imagine. And when John told me this story, I started to weep. And I couldn't stop. And so some friends gathered me together and they said, "You need to go home." And I said, "That's true." And I said, "But I can't do it by myself." And they essentially picked me up and helped me walk home that evening. And it was that evening that I essentially decided I'm not going back to to Laramie, Wyoming. This is not going to happen. And so the next day, trying to get it together, I actually received a couple of phone calls from colleagues in Laramie who were saying, "Come back, Paul, come back. We need articulate voices. We need people who care and people that can speak out against this kind of behavior." And to which my response was, then speak out. That was something I couldn't return to, because I can't imagine that. But the other part that I wanted to share with you was that the young people that you mentioned that I would attend the LGBT student meetings before I left, they were very caring. They were beautiful, both men and women. And when there was the service for Matt Shepard, I think it was in Casper, Wyoming, that Fred Phelps' group, the Westboro Baptist Church, who have a history of showing up and protesting in an anti-gay atmosphere, they were there. And so the young people that were in the LGBT group actually developed these costumes that were spectacular. They dressed themselves as angels, and they were arm in arm with these huge costumes that you couldn't see through, and they basically created a human walls such that when Matt Shepard's parents and anybody that was attending that service walked into the church where it was, they didn't have to see what was going on. And it was just, I mean, an incredible outpouring on support on the part of other young people that went in caring for Matt Shepard. And so that's basically, I mean, that's essential. I was just so blown away by what these young people were doing in support of a fellow friend.
Wow. That's an explosive story. How do you feel when you tell that story? Because I can tell when you're telling that story, it is very emotional. And as it unfolds, you have to see images that you don't want to revisit.
Well, I can see it. I can see the places where I was. Wyoming itself, and I mean no ill will to the state. It's a beautiful place. But the idea of, again, being by yourself and being so alone, it's so incredible. I mean, and so the idea that this poor young man had nobody that would help him, nobody that would reach out to him. And as you mentioned, I'm very dedicated in my life to reaching out and helping others and giving other people a hand up. That I just, yeah. I can't, this is the antithesis of everything that really moves me and motivates me.
Yeah. What do you want us to learn from the story? There are a lot of things.
Well,
but what's one thing you really want us to hone in on?
Is reaching out to other people. Again, you mentioned the work that I'm doing now with the Homeless Youth Network.
Yeah.
One of the things, the reason that I'm a university professor, aside from that I'm fascinated by the academic field that I study and the notion, I'm an applied linguist and I look at language acquisition. I enjoy reading and studying and doing research about those issues, but one of the biggest things that actually drew me to the University of Houston downtown is the variety and the multicultural diversity aspect of our community. And so the idea of you don't know whose life you're touching how, yeah. And you don't know who's had a bad day or what's happened to whom. And so the idea of just reaching out to somebody,
yeah.
And doing it selflessly, you have no idea what that might be doing for somebody else.
Yeah. Absolutely a beautiful thought. You are an example, you're a testament to what I mean when I frequently say that powerful narratives test the boundaries of the human heart. And that's really what you've done. And I just want to thank you so much for that. That was a very poignant story. That was a beautiful, beautiful story. I'm Hank Rubicek with Jacob Reiner, and you are listening to So What's Your Story with guest storyteller Dr. Paul Mandel on listener-sponsored 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston. Shadows of a thousand years rise again unseen. Voices whisper in the trees. Tonight is Halloween. Little bit of an emotional shift, but one we need. There's no better way to celebrate this festive night than to tell scary stories, blood-curdling, petrifying, menacing tales that will keep you up all night. Well, at least for a few hours. Halloween is my favorite day, and it's just around the creaky corner. And thanks to a rained-out event last Saturday, the Houston Storytellers Guild has rescheduled Skyline Screamers to this Saturday, October 31st. Of course, we're expecting rain. We just hope you don't have to cancel again. It's Halloween night, when they will garner some ghoulish stories to keep you up for a year. And it's going to be a scary night, but it is also very children-friendly. So bring the youngins, and Jake is going to tell you when and where to go. Jacob?
Yes, just plan to hover around the Haunting Tellers on Halloween this Saturday from 6 to 8 p.m. at Merriman Park, located at 1802 Heights Boulevard. That's early enough to listen to the tales and then trick-or-treat. Admission... Oh, there we go again. Admission is absolutely free. So bring your chairs, blankets, flashlights, and a place to hide. Because you're going to be afraid. Be very afraid.
I had to do that. I'm sorry. Thank you, Jacob. The Guild is the best storytelling group in the States, so don't miss Saturday's fun Fright Fest. And you know what? It's even more fun to become a member of the Guild and learn a thing or two about this magic that we call storytelling. Jacob, give us the information that we need to hear, please.
Well, the monthly story swaps are on the third Tuesday of the month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. located at the Multi-Service Center at 1475 West Gray. Check out all the events sponsored by the Guild and information about becoming a member at www.houstonstorytellers.org.
Great. Listen, we're going to be celebrating Veterans Day next week, right, with three veterans as our guest alerts. Yes, Jacob, what is the question to which each will be responding in story form? You gave him the question, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Oh,
it was.
Thank God. Because...
How was your experience? And what you would like, what we call civilians, to know about Veterans Day.
How was your experience? It took you a month to come up with that question. Is that it?
Sure.
Okay, that's a great question. Very good. Now, more specifically, good job. Good job. They're going to be giving a story that's about 3 minutes long.
Yes, right? Sir.
What are their names? Do we know who we got there?
Yes, we have
You chose the best stories.
We have a Chadwick Jones.
Chadwick Jones.
We have a Samuel. He actually played the clown in the haunted house. And
we'll talk about that in a minute. Everybody's losing you with that one, but we'll get back to it.
And the other student is actually going to be coming from U of H Central, their student veterans organization over there.
Great. And I left the story selections to Jake, and they're going to prove to be worth tuning in, I promise you. But, you know, you better be tuning in every week. Why wouldn't you on this, the only storytelling show originating in Houston, always live? So what's your story? Only on 90.1 KPFT Houston. Let's shift to Halloween. How is that haunted house going at UHD? Tell everybody what that's all about.
The haunted house was an absolute success. For U of H downtown has never had a haunted house.
Other than the school itself.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
So the Student Veterans Organization decided...
Or my office.
We decided that we were going to undertake the project to have the first one. And we had lines throughout the last 3 days. It ended today around 5. We left it open for another 3 hours because we had a solid crowd coming in.
Terrific. Let's talk a little bit about this. You know, I said earlier that Halloween is my favorite day, and it really is. As a kid, I remember thinking about next year and what I was going to be for Halloween the same night I went to sleep after trick-or-treating the year before. There was one Halloween, I was 10 years old, and I have to share this. It's a real quick story, but I was 10 years old, and Halloween meant everything to me. I was just one of those prototypical Halloween lovers as a kid. And I lived with my grandparents growing up. We lived in the same house, my grandparents, my mom, my dad, my brother, myself. And I was sick one Halloween. And we also lived not on a side street, so it was difficult for a lot of kids to come to the house to trick-or-treat. And it was a rainy night. And I was crying because there were no kids coming to the house, and I'm 10 years old, and I didn't feel really good about this. It was bad enough I couldn't trick-or-treat. So my grandfather, with his very deep accent, you have to keep this in mind, and his Parkinson's gets up all of a sudden, and he says, "I'll be right back." I don't know where he's going. And we don't see him for a while. It turns out he puts on my yellow raincoat. Remember those ridiculous plastic yellow raincoats? And obviously much too small on him. He put it on, and he walked to the front door, and as if I didn't know, he said, "Hello, trick or treat." I said, "What are you kidding me?" And I knew it was my grandfather, but I pretended that I did not know. All right. Now, I don't know how convincing I was, but it's a simple story, really. But here's a guy who could hardly walk. He couldn't fit into the stupid thing. And it was pouring outside. And he does this for me. And I don't know. I just think it's love incarnate. I just think that on days like this, when someone knows how important it is for a little kid, it was just a great story. I have many of them, but that one just came to mind when I was thinking about tonight. Paul, have you got any favorite Halloween memories?
Well, one of the things that, and I'm not sure if it's a memory per se, but one of the things we're doing now that at UHD, that in connection with the Multicultural Education and Counseling Through the Arts Mecca organization, they do a beautiful display of altars that community members have constructed in commemoration of family members and friends that have passed in the last year. But we go every year And would be going not this coming Saturday, but Saturday on the 7th of November to go to and Grace Yuniga, the director curator there, tells us a little bit about the design, the symbolism, and the origin of this Latin tradition. And so we go and students go, and this will be the third year in a row that we've gone. It's really amazing, and it's as opposed to a scary, spooky notion of what death is about. This is really about commemoration of people who've passed and people who are important, and what they mean to people here.
That's a fabulous memory. It is a fabulous memory. Jacob, have you got one? Or are you going trick-or-treating this Saturday or something?
It wasn't the trick-or-treating itself. It was...
This sounds so intense, doesn't it?
It was coming home.
It wasn't the trick-or-treating itself. Exactly. It's the... What?
It was coming home, dumping out my candy, looking at all the goodies I had.
Oh, okay.
But also, kind of glancing at my brother's candy also. Because I always knew if I run out of candy... I always had my brother's candy.
Yeah, you were essentially a thief. Halloween reminded you how you could be a thief.
So, may I ask a question?
Did you have a favorite candy?
Yes.
Was that it?
Yes, that was the question.
What was your favorite
Crunch
candy?
Bars.
What?
Crunch bars or crackles.
Like Nestle's Crunch bars.
Or crackles.
You have to give it the entire name. Crunch bar. Mm-hmm. That was a crunch
or
bar.
Or Hershey crackle.
Okay, very good. You know, the number one candy, I recently read this, so I'm not making it up, and you know, I'm an academic, I don't lie, right? Is a Twix bar. A Twix bar is the number one. I know, that was my expression. My jaws are open. Twix bar? Are you serious? What happened to M&M's, right? Or things
Reese's.
Like that. Reese's peanut butter cups. Reese's peanut butter cups.
I would have thought
as long
Snickers.
As it's not fruit or something. Snickers? Well, Snickers is really kind of the consummate one, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, Snickers kind of rules. It rocks. It's it. And Snickers would be great if we all got Snickers, but we really don't. And what about Peeps? Where do they come from? Right? You ever think about Peeps?
Not really.
That marshmallow stuff? It came out, really, for Easter, and then suddenly Valentine's Day. Now we get these little stupid marshmallow ghosts, but I happen to love them. I try to eat as many as I can at once. How many can you eat? I've eaten, no kidding, no hyperbole here, I've eaten 8 at one time. Now, The way you do that is you have to kind of push them together. But when you put them in the microwave for a few seconds, it is an amazing treat. Have you ever done that?
No.
You put Peeps on a paper plate, you pop them in the oven, 10 seconds, you take a plastic spoon, it's a real treat. Yeah, okay, I'm really sick. So let's talk about horror films. Have you got a favorite one?
Yes. Whatever Happened to Baby Jane?
Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, I like it.
I saw that movie at 4
Betty
o'clock
Davis
in the afternoon.
Betty Davis was pretty scary.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. And the scary part is that things like that probably could happen. That was what I really found, frightening about it, is that circumstances could, like, oh, my God.
Well, you know, when I teach storytelling, I talk about the fact that fairy tales are scary because they're in real time with familiar surroundings. Mm-hmm. You've seen the woods.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen a strange-looking house. An old, mean woman. Hello, Hansel and Gretel.
There you go.
There it is. It's right there. And they become very, very scary. That is a scary one. I forgot about that. For me, it's Psycho. It's always been Psycho. It's great. Mm-hmm. It's just Hitchcock at his best. Have you got a favorite one?
Pet Cemetery.
Stephen
King.
Cemetery?
Pet Cemetery.
Pet Cemetery?
Yes.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't think I've ever... Okay, what is one scary thing that happened in Pets? What? Like a chilling chihuahua? Or what do you get? Like a...
It wasn't.
Goofy gator,
it was actually Rachel's sister's face, the one that they kept in the attic.
Rachel's sister's face.
Yes,
kept in the attic.
She had a chronic disease, and she was left in the attic by her parents. And she, the youngest sister, had to take care of her. And just some of the makeup and the face that they did for her just screamed so loud. My aunt had to come in, and she told me and my cousin we weren't allowed to watch it anymore.
Oh, my God. Remind me never to watch that. Pet Cemetery. Actually, I do like Stephen King. Cujo's my favorite.
Good movie.
You know, you give me a big, mean St. Bernard, I'll give you a nightmare. You know what I mean? Okay, here's a cute little story. Just thought I'd share it with you. It's a Texas Halloween investigation written by a young man. There was a murder in Texas at Halloween, and the FBI were called in to investigate. Hitchcock, one of the officers, saw something written in blood on the wall. It looked like the number 7734, but he wasn't sure. Anyway, he took lots of pictures. Now, when Hitchcock got back to the lab, he developed the film of the crime scene, but he still could not make any progress with the number.
In the hope of inspiration, he took the sheaf of photographs home and spread them out on the dining room table. Just at that moment, his 7-year-old daughter, Emma, came in through the patio door opposite and looked down at the photographs. Why have you photographed hell? She asked. And then Hitchcock saw that when held upside down, 7734 spelt hell. I just thought I'd share that with you. But we now have to sing the Halloween anthem. Are you ready? No one liked that story. Maybe you'll like this. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm. I'm ready.
1, 2, 3, and.
Give me candy corn and I won't cry. Give me candy corn and I won't cry. Your candy better not suck.
Great. Good job. Very, very good. You are enjoying guest storyteller Dr. Paul Mandel and the Von Trapp Family Singers on So What's Your Story? Pacifica KPFT 90.1 Houston. Any shout-outs today? Anybody listening that you want us to know about? Or
yes, I'm supposed to say buenas noches, Martin. Y también, Edith.
Very, very, very good. Can you say it in another language? You know, this is a diverse city.
Bon anniversaire or something like
okay,
that.
Okay, that's good. Uh-huh. That's good. Who was the storyteller in your home growing up?
Actually, it was my great-aunt, Aunt Effie, who was remarkable, was from Connecticut. And she told incredible stories.
What kind of stories did she tell you?
About life in New England and life at the turn of the century.
Yeah.
And she and my maternal grandmother were of 8 children, and they remembered things like the Titanic going down and the explosion of the Hindenburg, and so they tell stories about that. And so it's remarkable what they experienced in their lifetime.
That is amazing. Mm-hmm. They experienced Hindenburg?
They were alive when it happened, and they remembered the stories.
Oh, my gosh. Is that the Halloween theme? Michael? Michael, have you come home? Michael? Oh, I love that. That's great. Lord Byron remarks, sometimes it seems like we're living in a prison, and the crime is how much we hate ourselves. Thank you, Dr. Paul Mandel, for your time and for your poignant narrative in remembrance of Matthew Shepard, complete with the loving care and tenderness with which it was framed. The story's parable must be lodged in our minds and even deeper in our hearts. I really thank you so much for that. And thank you for adding to this Halloween fun. I know we shifted a couple of emotions tonight, but I think we did it pretty successfully. Have fun and be careful this weekend, everyone. Get out to see Skyline Screamers Saturday night, Halloween, 6 to 8 if you can. And it's again at 1812 on Heights Boulevard. At the gazebo. It'll be a lot of fun. Be there or be very, very square. Scooter is up next with the inner side to complete the backside of this power hour on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling out, join us every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story and ease into the weekend right. You keep loving a great story, and I'm going to keep bringing them to you. Be good to each other. Till next week. I'm Dr. Hank, reminding you that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
'Come celebrate the Day of the Dead. The celebration of the Day of the Dead is a ritual that symbolizes the alliance of life and death and generates transcendence. This celebration has its origin in the pre-Columbian era and has endured for more than 3,000 years until today. Ancient cultures celebrate it in the 9th month of the Aztec calendar under the vigilance of the duality of transcendent deities. Come and share with us this ancient tradition at KPFT Pacifica Radio, 419 Levitt Boulevard, November 1st, from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. On November 1st, we invite you to participate in the setting up of an altar for the dead and to spend that afternoon listening to poetry, singing, and dancing. Again, that's Sunday, November 1st, from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. at 4.